you're going to assess about a number on a scale, why am I not losing weight? Why am I not losing weight? Instead of going, how do I feel? Oh, my jeans feel looser. That's cool. You know, I mean, the number on the scale, first of all, doesn't tell the whole story anyway. What if you're retaining muscle mass, you know, and so your body's like slowing down on losing its body fat? You know, that's a good thing. You don't want to lose muscle mass.
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, and this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. Whenever trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where our conversations might go. So there aren't too many topics that are off limits for us. So if you're ready, let's get started. Hello, welcome back to the Trail Talk Podcast. My guest this week is Dave Basile. He goes by Anti-Gravity Gains on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. We are talking this week about diet, specifically the keto diet, intermittent fasting, and how those apply to us as ultramarathon runners. We also get into talking a little bit about mindset. This conversation was taken from a Facebook Live that we did. We had a few technical issues, and so you will hear maybe some gaps, maybe some glitches in the audio, but the content is good. I think it will be worth listening to. Now, here's my conversation with Dave Basile. Hello, welcome to the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. Tonight, my guest is Dave Basile. Now, I did not ask you for the correct pronunciation of your name, but that's the way it's spelled. So
that's it. That's
right. Perfect. Okay. Yeah. And I met Dave. Dave is a we've met, I think, in person one time. Dave, I think I was at the Alt Chili Run, and you came through.
Yes, it was.
I was a volunteer. We just had a few words, but most of our conversations have been through Instagram, and somewhat on Facebook, and so. Dave has two accounts on Instagram. One is called The Real Basile, and the one that I've really connected with him on is called Anti-Gravity Gains. And we're going to probably get into talking about what Anti-Gravity Gains is about as we go forward. But Dave is an ultra runner. He's got a good story as far as making a journey into healthful living, and has got some perspectives that have actually been a benefit for me and inspiring to me and help me keep going. So I'm really glad to have you on here, Dave. We'll get to know you a little bit better as we go along. So also I wanted to say for you, if you're watching this live, if you leave a comment, I'm going to be monitoring the comments on the separate monitor. And so if you want to join in the conversation and comment on something we've said or ask a question for either one of us, just have at it if you're watching this live. And if you do happen to watch it on replay and have a question, you can certainly send me a message and talk to me about anything as well. So, Dave, welcome to Trail Talk Live. As we said, as I say to all of the people, whenever I head out onto the trail with a group of friends, we always say whatever's said on the trail stays on the trail, and so. But that gives us the option, and it gives us the freedom to talk about anything openly. I want to have that same kind of feeling here. Although the fact is that we are live on Facebook, and so, but we have
put me on the spot.
We have broached some rather interesting topics, and just like a trail conversation, one of our topics ended up about the advantages of toe sniffing after a race. So
nice, I missed out on that.
we're pretty much open to. Except Facebook's guidelines as far as as language, and we try to keep that within Facebook's guidelines. But so, welcome, Dave, to Trail Talk. Great to have you here.
Thanks, Eric. I appreciate it. I've been following your Ultra Marathon Mindset page and a lot of your stuff on Instagram. And yeah, Anti-Gravity Gains is something I started a few years ago, kind of as an accountability type page, and just, you know, really into the fitness life. You know, I was on the injury list as far as running goes. So I got into weight training and stuff like that and fiddled around with this low carb diet stuff and been a lifelong runner, pretty much an endurance type. But I'm really glad to be here on Trail Talk Live with you and ask you a few questions too, not just talk about my
experience. Yeah. Okay. I'm not ignoring you. I'm trying to get this set up here so I can monitor comments. And it's up there now. Sometimes I have technical problems, and so if something like that happens,
me too.
I apologize. apologize.
It's all good. It's all good. Had some,
but, so I remember I've seen pictures of you your past life when you were somewhat out of shape and overweight. And so tell me a little bit about your weight loss journey, and then a little bit about your running.
What you do. I mean, like I said, with running, you know, I grew up as a kid, you throw me a ball, I'd catch it, you know, kick me a ball, I'd kick it back to you. I loved sports as a kid. Loved being outdoors, you know, so I was always a very active kid, but just of the body type and my natural metabolic physique, you know, just the way I work is I can put on the weight in the midsection pretty easily, and I'm a big eater. And you know, in college on and off, just eating garbage food sometimes, and then eventually I get into consistent running again in my young 30s, and I was running marathons, and you know, I saw like a post. It was actually after a 20K, Dam to Dam up in Iowa. I saw a picture. It was just super humid that day. I had my shirt off, had the medal on, you know, whatever. And I'm looking at myself. So I'll just say this, you know, shamelessly, vanity is what brought me to like a low carb diet, right? Because I'm looking at this picture of myself. I'm like, man, I'm putting on 25, 35 miles a week. You know, I'm really consistent. I only eat poorly, you know, maybe once on the weekend, maybe, you know, once midweek, you know, why am I carrying this extra 30 pounds, which seems to be all around the midsection, you know? And that's what just got me interested in looking into a different way of eating, you know, to see what I could do. It wasn't, you know, I couldn't outrun the bad eating habits. And even though I wasn't eating, you know, a bunch of sugar and stuff every day or anything like that, I was still having issues with weight, and I was also sustaining some injuries from running, and of course carrying around a little bit of extra weight makes that even more apt to happen.
A lot of runners say that they do run to be able to maintain their unhealthy eating. You know, right. I saw a group on Facebook, and there was a group of people who said that I run because I like to eat ice cream.
And me too. I might join that group. But yeah, it's
so, but for you, yeah. It didn't work. You couldn't outrun a bad diet.
Not really. I mean, I could for a while, but after a while it doesn't work. And you know, when you're, I think as a long distance runner, first of all, anything half marathon on up, you know, you get to the point where there's wear and tear issues. And I think when you're carrying around extra weight, even if it's like too much muscle, for example, it can be hard on the knees. And, so, you know, in my case, it was just a lot of this extra belly fat. And, you know, you have that on every step. I forget how many steps are in a marathon or in a half marathon. That's a lot of weight on each impact on every step. And I believe that's what, you know, I ended up sustaining a knee injury, you know, back in 2012. So the other thing with this low carb way of eating I noticed is that it helped me feel better as far as energy stability in general. I wouldn't have this afternoon crash. That's fairly common with the standard Western diet or standard American diet. You eat often, and you're often eating starchy foods and or sugars, you know, something out of the vending machine to get you until lunch after your breakfast in the morning, then something to get you to dinner time and mid afternoon. So you're not getting super tired in the conference meetings and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, it's just, I noticed going low carb, I didn't have to worry about, you know, chasing, you know, energy so much. My body was providing the energy, and there, I can talk a little bit more about that later too, about what happens when you get into ketosis, for example. Mm-hmm. Your body is able to switch over to using fat more often than not. I mean, we're all able to do that, but with our modern foodscape, so many of the foods have the extra added sugars and carbohydrates, and we're even advised to eat, you know, carbohydrates. And I'm not against carbohydrates in any. I mean, I think carbohydrates are very useful, for example, and I can get into that later too, as far as targeting in carbohydrates, like Zach Bitter, who is the 100-mile record holder on a track, and he uses carbohydrates strategically. But if you have metabolic issues, which I consider myself as having, you know, metabolic syndrome, I was carrying around this extra 30 pounds. That was just a symptom of a bigger problem. You know, it's the metabolism that luckily for me, I could see there's a symptom here going on. Something metabolically is off. Something's going on with my hormones that's causing me to keep this extra weight on. And yeah, there's the calories in, calories out thing. I get that. But I don't think every calorie is equal, because I do think some calories, like, you know, Oreos or ice cream, they want you to keep coming back for more. I mean, these people, these food companies have scientists in there twirling their mustaches trying to figure out the right recipe to make you come back for more. And some people are more predisposed to succumbing to those temptations than others. That's, you know, and I happen to be one of them. You know, you give me a little bit of sugar, I'm going to want more. But, you know, when you get into a low carb way of eating, it's strange how some of that desire to eat that junk food goes away. It's as if you're healing your body. That's been my experience. Anyway, and again, I'm not a doctor and I'm not a medical professional or anything like that. I'm just sharing with you my experience. So.
Yeah.
But that's what helped me. Eventually that's what helped me lose that extra stubborn belly fat. You know, of course I continue to exercise. I'm not one of these people. There's a lot of overcorrection happens too, where people think, you know, you can just lose all the weight without doing any exercise. And it's like, yeah, you could, but if you're able body and you can exercise, why wouldn't you do that? You know, it's like,
so how far
away, minority of the solution, you don't want to leave that off the table.
Yeah. So before you changed to low carb, how far were you running? What kind of mileage were you putting in before?
Well, you know, it just depended on the time of the year, you know, with peak training season versus not, you know, but just in the off season, you know, 25 miles a week on average, not just weekend warrior, two runs on the weekend or anything, you know, good three or four runs per week, you know, off season, then ramping up the volume during marathon training season. So
were you doing ultra marathons or marathons then?
I had not done an ultra marathon until I moved down here from Iowa. And strangely, I went back up to Iowa to run it. It was the Hawkeye 50K. But that was in 2015. And the reason that was is because I mentioned in 2012, I had a meniscus injury. And I was really close to going in for surgery for it. But I moved down here for a job to Kansas City. And I just couldn't take time off to get the surgery. I had the MRI or what have you, the x-rays. And oddly enough, it just kind of cleaned up itself. You know, sometimes I could run across a soccer field and be in extreme pain, you know, and other times I could, you know, make it a whole 2 miles. It was just dependent on the day. And then after about 2.5 years of, you know, running small little 2 milers and stuff and experimenting to see how I felt that day, that coupled with weight training, after about 2.5 years, it finally got to where my knee went from feeling 50% to about 90%. So.
Okay.
It rehabbed, you know, it was good I had to get away from running big miles basically to do that. But I asked my primary care physician, oh, somebody has a small tear in their meniscus and it just resolves itself. He said, oh yeah, it happens. Oh, okay. Glad I didn't get the surgery, I guess.
Well, I would prefer not having surgery if you could get by that.
Yeah. I've heard good and bad about knee surgery. So it seems kind of like a roll of the dice on that.
Yeah. Yeah. So you started doing low carb, and then when did you start increasing were you able to increase your mileage then from when you started eating low carb?
Yeah, I was able to increasing my mileage, and general body inflammation went down. It wasn't just the knee, you know, but just in general, just less aches and pains. Sugar is something that will cause inflammation in the body, study show, and I definitely believe that to be true in my case.
Yeah. I know you were talking about you were talking about Oreos, and I had an experience with Oreos, and I was going fine, and I run into this aid station. It was like the first aid station, like about 8 miles in, at the War Eagle, and I was like, oh man, I haven't had Oreos for ages, and I grabbed like five Oreos.
Race day, that's great.
In the race, you know. And you know, it was like, about 10 minutes later, I could hardly run. Did
it hit your gut? Was it the
no? It just I had the sugar. There was rush, and then a crash. You know, it's just like a sugar crash. And
had you been doing low carb leading up to that? I know you said you experimented with low carb too.
So. Yeah, and you know, and I do what I say kind of keto. It's I added in a lot more fats, and so I cut down on my. I'm not at down at the level that people who do the keto diet.
Right.
I just cut back, but I emphasize fats and proteins more than sugars. And so there are times, you know, I'll have a cookie or two, but
me too. Honestly, it's interesting. And I think as runners, I'm also into intermittent fasting. In fact, I got into that well before I got into keto. Okay. So intermittent fasting is just basically time restricted eating. Fasting is usually something more than like 24 hours, where you're just not taking in any calories. You might have some water, maybe some salt, but I got into intermittent fasting, mainly because I was not a morning. I did not like to eat in the morning. And, you know, in our running culture, everybody's like, oh, you got to have a little something before you run anything that's like 45 minutes or more. And I felt like I was force feeding. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I would have gastrointestinal issues. You know, if I had a banana and a granola bar, which are sort of healthy foods compared to the regular American diet, right? The granola bar, I beg to differ. It's not really that healthy, but the banana is not bad. But sometimes I had gut issues, you know? And so I thought, you know, I'm just kind of tired of hearing the voices tell me I've got to eat. And so I would skip not having the meal and go for, you know, a 2-hour run, and I'd feel fine. And I'm just like, well, here's my own personal experience saying that I really don't have to eat, you know, before a long run. Now on race day, it's different. You want to optimize and things like that. So I do strategize a little bit different as far as nutrition before, you know, like race day, or maybe doing a 4-hour training run or something like that. I don't know why I brought up intermittent fasting. I think we were talking about low carb. Oh, about getting into ketosis. I think as runners, we burn through this glycogen rather easily. Especially as ultra runners, you know, if you're going to be out there for 4 or 6 hours, more than likely you're getting into ketosis at some point, you know, maybe after the run or, you know, somewhere in the run, if your heart rate's low enough, you know, you're burning fat anyway. And that's what's great about low carb also, is it gets your body used to burning fat. So if you're keeping your heart rate low enough, you're down in the aerobic zone, your body tends to burn the fat fuel for energy more effectively. Now, if your heart rate's coming up too much, it's not like it completely switches off using fats, but it's going to want that rocket fuel, as Agbear calls it. It's going to want the glucose, the carbohydrates. So, that's what I like to do, is target in those carbs. If I want to run a marathon really fast, and try to avoid the wall, you know, I'm bringing in some carbs, anything goes. I'll take the Oreos, you know, if my gut can handle the Oreos, you know, and then, you know, get back to a healthier way of eating afterwards. But I'd like to experiment with this stuff. I really do. And this heart rate stuff is a really big deal I've really honed in on the last couple of years. I ran the Garmin Marathon, and I just on a whim decided, okay, I'm going to have nothing but bacon and water for this marathon. And I kind of have anything that's a paved road race marathon, anything that's on paved surface, I want to try to finish all my marathons under 4 hours. I made this stupid goal like years ago. And so it always comes in my head. I'm like, I'm not all that trained up, but I decided to just fuel with bacon, which, you know, there's fats, there's proteins, there's really not carbohydrates in bacon. And I had about 250 calories worth. So it was bacon before bonk, you know, and the idea was just like, I woke up in a fasted state. I didn't have anything. I just had some electrolytes and some water and my normal coffee, with nothing added to the coffee. And I got out to Garmin headquarters and I raced, and I didn't even have my first bite of bacon until like mile 7 or 8. And I didn't even finish all the bacon. So in less than 250 calories of bacon, you know, I was able to finish, and I think it was a 352 finish or 356, something like that. But, you know, I probably had my heart rate up high enough to where, you know, I was going to need glucose eventually. And I think probably within about a half hour of that, I probably would have been hitting a wall. I mean, it's just something I like to flirt with, that failure. I like to see what can happen. And that one was like, okay, let's have the heart rate up out of the aerobic zone where I'm just kind of getting into anaerobic. I'm not going super fast, but I'm definitely not at conversation pace. And I'm flirting with hitting a wall here. And, you know, around mile 22, it was getting difficult, but I was able to rebound and I sustained, you know, good energy and was able to finish. And it's just, these are just, I don't know why I come up with these experiments, but they're fun to me. I like to beat the odds, I guess. And people say you got to eat carbs if you're going to be in a, if you're out of the anaerobic zone. I'm like, well, you know, you can get away with it. I think everybody's got a bonk point. And I think it's actually good to find out where that is, no matter what kind of diet you're on, so that you can, you know, if I would have failed that day and, you know, bonked and hit the wall and taken 30 minutes to finish the last, you know, mile and a half, it would have been a learning experience for me. Right. And I would have learned something from it. So it was just worth the risk to me either way.
Yeah. Have a question from Jordan Zimmerman. He said, have you ever hit a plateau? I'm assuming a weight loss plateau. And how did you break
it? Oh, yeah. 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 I mean, I think a plateau, it's hard to define what it really is. I would say, I would give yourself at least 2 weeks. First of all, if you're going to change your diet in any way, no matter what kind of diet, let's say you go from standard American diet to a vegan diet. I mean, you're automatically eating healthier. You're not eating a bunch of, you know, Oreos or ice cream or buckets of popcorn at the movie theater, right? I mean, you're going to a healthier diet. And you're going to lose weight, you know. So definitely, you know, or if you're going to a low carb or a keto diet from, you know, standard American diet, you're going to lose water weight. And that's great and everything because you're automatically going to have less pressure on your organs from losing some of that water weight. But eventually it's going to normalize and your body's going to hit a plateau and, you know, it likes homeostasis. It doesn't want to change constantly. You're not going to lose 2.2 pounds a week forever. So there's just different things you can do. I'd say definitely something that's often neglected is sleep. And sleep, if you're getting a lack of sleep in a chronic way, like over and over and over getting lack of sleep, you know, a lot of weight loss, I think it has to do with hormones. And if your cortisol is raised up too much, which is what tends to happen if you're, you know, in chronic sleep deprivation, I mean, cortisol supposedly has an adverse effect against, you know, weight management and weight loss. So that's definitely something you want to hone in on. But if your diet, you're still doing something, let's say you've gone to a low carb diet and you're down at 40 carbs per day, maybe you bring it down to 30 carbs. Maybe you're exercising like a nut job like Eric and I, and you're running 40 miles a week, 360, you know, 52 weeks a year, you know, you should have an off season. You know, there's adrenal fatigue. There's things like this. And I think a lot of what I've heard is a lot of women run into adrenal fatigue and people with like fibromyalgia. My sister's talked to me a lot about adrenal fatigue. And I think it happens a lot in our community with all the miles we run. So that can adversely affect your weight loss goals too.
Next week, I'm having a lady on that is good. She experienced burnout. And so that next week on Trail Talk, we'll be talking about burnout.
But you know, the weight loss plateau, I don't know if Mr. Zimmerman was talking about, you know, if this person is on a low carb diet, but you know, a lot of people in the keto or low carb community, they get pretty militaristic. And if you suggest the idea of like doing a carb up, they're like, oh no, you don't need to do that. And maybe you don't need to do that, but there's also something called metabolic flexibility. And some people that do, you know, a ketogenic diet, you got to check what your motives are. I mean, are you fighting epilepsy? Because that's what, you know, I mean, the ketogenic diet, I think it was about 100 years ago. There's some history on it. It was used to mimic fasting, right? So people, especially children with epilepsy. And, you know, again, I'm not a doctor, so go do this research yourself. But from what I researched, that's what the diet was used for, was to help mitigate some of the seizures for children with epilepsy. And it was very effective. But this was a very, very high fat diet, very, very low carb, like as close to zero on carbs as you could get. And it worked. So if you're using this kind of diet for a medical issue, that's one thing. But if you're using it, you know, maybe because you want to, you know, have good endurance and you're running ultra marathons, or you're using it for weight loss, then there's probably nothing wrong with having, you know, carbs and bringing them up to 100 grams or 150 grams maybe every few weeks or something. Now, of course, this is after you originally get adapted. You want to have a good 5-6 weeks, I would say, on average, of being pretty strict keto where your carbs are down 20, 30 grams of carbs. And, of course, you know, this isn't all equal for everybody. Eric, who's running a lot of miles, can probably eat 50 carbs and still be in ketosis because, I mean, he's burning off glycogen, you know, 30 minutes, you know, into his 30-mile run that weekend. You know, it's different for Eric than it is for a person that is just, you know, going for walks a few times a week or something like that. Mm-hmm. But something like a carb up can actually change, you know, ghrelin and leptin are two other pretty big hormones involved with, you know, controlling hunger and hormone signals and stuff like that. So, you know, there's been, you know, some research that indicates having carbs brought in kind of resets some of those hormones and gets your metabolism back on track. Again, I don't know all the ins and outs of that. Whether if I believe it or not, I don't know, but I would experiment with that too.
I experienced several plateaus in 2017. I at the beginning of 2017, I said I'd had like a goal to lose about 20 pounds. For 15 years, I had this goal. I set this goal. I'm going to lose 20 pounds.
Yeah.
I changed at the beginning of 2017, and I said to myself, at the end of this year, on December 31st, I'm going to weigh under 200 pounds. And wow. So the shift, that was the first step for me, was to shift
your mind.
Yeah. Shift my mind is like, okay, it's not the weight I have to lose. It's the weight I'm going to have. And it was a whole year. I mean, I had a whole year to do it.
Sure.
And I said, this is where I'm going to be at the end of this year. And it was almost like a vow I made to myself. And so the method, I'd heard about ketosis. A friend of mine has type 2 diabetes, and she'd introduced us to the ketogenic diet, and it worked well for her for health reasons. But I said, okay, I'm going to do this to lose weight. So I cut out sugar completely. I mean, like no processed sugar, all of January. And so that was kind of my start. And then I started lowering all the rest of the carbs. And so, you know, I wasn't as strict as she was, but I hit several plateaus. I mean, I hit times where I dropped some weight immediately, and then I'd hit a plateau sometimes for 3 weeks. I mean, and it was frustrating because I was at a plateau, but I kept going.
Frustrating. it is frustrating, but it goes back to your body's wanting some equilibrium. You know, let's think about if you lose 2.5 pounds every week forever. I mean, that's just not realistic. Can you imagine the flip side, the reverse of that? If we gain 2.5 pounds a week forever, I mean, you know, I deserve to gain 2.5 pounds a week for many years in a row. Thankfully, my body has a built-in mechanism where it's not going to let me do that. Now, some people will continue to gain at a constant rate, but we can't expect to always have it be the same number every week that we lose. And there's a reason, you know. I mean, our body wants to survive. It's going to hoard that weight. I'm losing weight. You know, I've got to protect myself in case, you know, we have a famine here and we can't get food.
Well, and the thing that I found was that I hit one plateau, and then I started, you know, I got through that, and then I wasn't dropping fast. I wasn't in a hurry. I mean, when I hit this and I hadn't lost weight for three weeks, it didn't bother me because my goal was like still 6 months out. And so I kept doing, you know, like, oh, I know this is going to work. I'm not going to give up on it. And so that's the thing that kind of kept me through. It was just knowing that I was eventually, I was going to make that goal.
That's a great mindset to have, you know, because if you obsess about it, let's get back to cortisol. If you're going to obsess about a number on a scale, why am I not losing weight? Why am I not losing weight? Instead of going, how do I feel? Oh, my genes feel looser. That's cool. You know, I mean, the number on the scale, first of all, doesn't tell the whole story anyway. What if you're retaining muscle mass, you know, and so your body's like slowing down on losing its body fat? You know, that's a good thing. You don't want to lose muscle mass. So the rate of your weight loss should probably slow, right? That's the other thing I would suggest too, is if you're not doing any resistance training, to do resistance training. And in fact, there's really good odds that your weight will go up once you start resistance training with newbie gains, if you haven't been doing any weightlifting or TRX or any of these different ways of doing resistance training, your weight might go up. So that's something I would caution, is to watch out for the number on the scale going up if you get into something like weightlifting, because initially, you're going to gain some muscle mass, and the body's going through a different kind of stress that it's not used to. So it's probably going to retain some water and things like this too. But that's it. I mean, to me, I told you I got into it for vanity's sake, you know, but that's not what kept me here. You know, I mean, getting into it because I looked at an image of myself on a picture and going, gosh, you know, I'm running, you know, 40 miles a week in peak training season. And why am I still carrying around this extra weight? What am I doing this for? You know, and my knees are hurting, all this kind of stuff. And then, but what kept me around is really the side benefits besides losing some of the belly fat is like, wow, I just generally don't feel the inflammation. And wow, I don't have afternoon crashes anymore. This is cool. I don't have to go to the vending machine at work after lunch, an hour after lunch, so I can survive until 5 o'clock before I get home for dinner. So these are just some of the side benefits of it that I really like. And I know that diets are a very personal thing. So again, I'm not against carbohydrates. I'm against carbohydrates if you're eating the way I used to eat. Even if you're eating healthy 5 days out of the week, but you're throwing in the Oreos every once in a while, because it's just going to work against you, especially if you're like me, the older you get, your metabolism is just not going to keep up with it. And you're not going to outrun that weekend binge on Oreos or whatever it is. It doesn't take a lot, you know? And then you see, and it's frustrating. Here's another eye opener for me. I worked out with a guy at the gym. The guy could eat 3 donuts and he's a washboard of abs and everything. I look at 3 donuts. I gained 10 pounds. You know what I mean? It's just, everybody's got a different physique and a different metabolism, you know, health status, if you will. And their story is their story. Mine's mine. You know, I got to figure out, I'm going to do my own mad scientist experiment on my body, you know. And again, I'm not a doctor. Check with your doctor, your gardener, your hairstylist, whoever you got to check with. But if you're interested, if you have a moment like I had, even if it's a vain moment, seize it and go explore it. Go research. You know, go research paleo, go research vegan, go research anything that's against the standard American diet. And even you might experiment with ditching the grains and sugars. You know, the granola bar might not be so good for you. Yeah, it's not the Quick Trip donut that I love to eat, but you know, the granola bar might not be as good as you think it is. So I would just advise to experiment with it, no matter what kind of diet you're doing. Try to, the Whole 30 is another one that I hear is a really good diet, for example. That'd be another great one.
Yeah. Now you've done, you said you did the diet first. What did you notice a difference in your, you noticed a difference in your running. Did you pick up speed? Did you drop weight? Did you increase distance before you went to intermittent fasting?
Well, actually I started the intermittent fasting, I'd say before, you did that before keto. Like I'd skip breakfast in the morning type thing, but you know, intermittent fasting, not really much extended fasting, nothing beyond, you know, 20 hours, but really I did different variations experimenting with low carb, but never really getting into ketosis from a long-term standpoint, nothing beyond getting into ketosis on a long run on a weekend because I ditched the grains and sugar all week long and my glycogen ran out on my 3-hour run that week. But I got into the, you know, more strict, consistent use of the ketogenic diet July of 2016.
Okay.
So I remember it was right after Leadville, June 2016. And the first thing I'll say is, I definitely noticed it take me down a couple notches in strength on weight training, you know, for about 3 weeks about a couple weeks.
The ketogenics or the intermittent fasting?
Yeah, ketogenic diet, not intermittent fasting. It's like you're shedding the glycogen. Your body's not used to going to fats first for fuel instead of the glucose, the carbs. So your body's got to adapt. You know, you're even fighting, you could have like headaches and stuff like that for a couple few days. But even 5 days into it, you know, I just didn't have the strength that I used to have, you know. But you've got to realize that's going to come back eventually. So after a few weeks, it started coming back, the strength and the resistance training. And a little bit of that happened as well, too, I'd say, with the running. I'd noticed a little bit flat. So a great time of year, I think, is in the off season to do it. You know, if you're a runner, if you're in the middle of, you know, you're on week 8 of your training program, you know, I strongly advise against switching your diet to anything really, unless it's like an emergency and you're having gut issues or something, but probably not the time to go through keto adaptation, you know, when you're 3 weeks out from your marathon that you've been training for.
Yeah.
I'd hold off.
Yeah. I know that, since I've been following you, you, you talk a lot about intermittent fasting. So give a little bit of a background of how, what that has done for you and what you've experimented. You experiment, you talk about dry fasting, you talk about,
you switch
up your fasting quite a bit. I mean, there have been some things that you've done. I'm like, wow. You know? so tell me the benefits, the benefits you found from doing some of that.
Well, I mean, first of all, eating less often means you have to worry about less meals. That's kind of a bonus, you know, with all of our busy lives. But I'm not saying that's the main motive. I think we talked about it before. We may have talked about it while we're live here too. But a lot of the consensus in the running community is, hey, you got to eat a meal before you go run. You know, if you're going to run over a half hour, you're going to die if you don't eat. I mean, I'm kind of dramatizing here, but it's kind of like they look at you sideways, like, are you crazy? You know, if you're not going to eat at least a half a banana and maybe a granola bar or something before, or those oats, you know, before you go running, that's risky. But I found that to be, you know, that's just not true. For me, it's not true. And I think, you know, for some people it might be, but that's the other thing. I think runners, some of them are more metabolically flexible without doing a low carb keto diet. It's like some runners might need, you know, to restore their glycogen more often than others, you know, and I didn't feel like I needed to do that before I ever got into keto. I felt like I was able to run in a fasted state for up to at least a couple hours without really worrying about it, eating, you know, even without doing a low carb diet. But yeah, your original question was getting into fasting and stuff like that. I got into that, the intermittent fasting, which is basically you just don't eat any calories for, let's say, normally you wake up and you eat at 8 o'clock, maybe wait until 10 o'clock. Maybe you didn't eat since 8 o'clock the night before. So instead of waking up and eating at 7 or 8 at 11 or 12 hours, you know, cause you fasted overnight while you're sleeping. Maybe just wait until 10 o'clock. See if you can go 13 or 14 hours, you know, before you have your first calories. You can have your plain coffee or whatever. And then, you know, push that to 16 hours, maybe, you know, and here's the other thing. If you're white knuckling it, you're like, I gotta eat. Just throw in the towel, eat. You have the rest of your life to try this again. There's not a failure. There's no real risk here. And what kind of benefit are you going to get out of a fast if you're just like dying and all you can do is think about that next meal? Just throw in the towel, try again another day, you know? And so I would get to where I would get, you know, try to do, you know, maybe just a small afternoon meal at, you know, 17 or 18 hours in and then have dinner. And then, you know, I would get to like one meal a day sometimes. And it wasn't like I was always increasing. It was just like, a few weeks later I go, hey, I made it to my afternoon meal, but I don't really feel that hungry. Mm-hmm. How about I wait until 21 hours instead of breaking it at 18, you know? And it's just crazy what you find out with self-experimentation like this, because, you know, doctors and everybody, they all tell us you got to eat every few hours, you know, and I find it to be the opposite of true. I'm not saying there's no value to it, but I don't think you have to stoke the metabolism every 2 or 3 hours to have a healthy metabolism. I'm finding the opposite to be true, especially coupled with a lower carb diet. It doesn't even have to be a ketogenic diet. If you do something like intermittent fasting a few times a week, and you're only, even if you just do like 16 hours or 14 hours, and you ditch the grains and sugars, and you still have like blueberries, you know, maybe a half an apple, you're still eating some fruits, stuff like that. But you're also time restricting. You're doing some of this intermittent fasting. I strongly believe you'll see results. Mm-hmm. You'll have some adaptation. You'll have some symptoms. You'll have a headache because you're like, wow, I'm used to eating, you know, upon awakening, breaking my fast with breakfast, right? I mean, there's going to be adaptation. You've been doing something a certain way. You're going to have a headache. And then the seventh time you do it, you're not going to have a headache, you know? I mean, mm-hmm. I'll still like have a headache sometimes. It's just like, it's kind of like when you prepare for a marathon, you know, you do all this training, you do all this nutrition planning, all this strategizing. And then for whatever reason on game day, on race day, you still follow that strategy, nutrition, and everything sucks. And it just doesn't work. Oh, well, maybe you just didn't sleep well enough. Maybe you slept 9 hours a night before, but you weren't breathing right when you slept. Who knows? Who knows what the X factor was that worked against you. And then, you know, sometimes I've been undertrained, like my second fastest marathon, I wasn't trained up and I ran it 4 minutes slower than my very fastest. I did not deserve that finish time. I have no idea why. And I was very comfortable actually. So, I mean, you know, part of me is just train how you feel and run how you feel. And I took this running coach thing because I get questions and stuff, and I need to learn about more regimen and stuff. But for my personal preference and my personal goals, more often than not, I'm just kind of a do it by feel. You know, it's there's not an exact science to it. It's more of an art form. You know, it's my N equals one mad scientist thing for me. But I want to be able to help others because they might prefer a more strict format, you know, with training and things like that. And you talked a little bit about chi running, which is very interesting to me.
Yeah, chi running is all about form and you know, proper form and form and alignment of the body. That's a part of it. There's also then what I call the internal part, the mental part, because it's based on the Tai Chi, which is they call it yoga in motion is kind of the idea. It is the energy force that's all around us the Tai Chi masters can actually channel the Chi, and with a very, very short, to defend themselves, a very short punch can knock a guy clear across the room. And it's the internal, what they call it, an internal martial art.
Wow.
But it's the same kind of thing as meditating. There's a power that each of us have, and Bible calls it the soul. I'm of the opinion that all of everything that is created by God. And so it's the energy that God, you know, that the world runs on. And, it's also the chi running is proper form, but also of using that internal energy in a way to help it flow through your body. And that's kind of what I do as a mindset coach, ultramarathon mindset coach. When I say it's connecting, getting your mind and your body to cooperate, work together, to be in sync. And rather than, you know, and a lot of runners I read and talk to, their mind is driving their body. You know, the idea is that you've got your mind is over the body to push it, kind of like a drill instructor, or a cowboy with a whip, you know, back there cracking the whip That's one approach, but I don't think it's as effective. I don't think long term that's a productive way to live your life, for one thing, and and the relationship between the mind and the body is for health. And so when the mind is healthy and in sync with the body, I mean, you can have self healing. You can have you know, things that quicker recovery from injury. And so, you can have a sitting down meditation or you can have a running meditation, but it's the same idea. It's your mind and body working together. So that's the other part of chi running that is, it's the internal part as well as the outward form. So it's more than just form, for chi running.
This is very, very interesting. My fiance is into hatha yoga. She's instructed yoga. I mean, not just, you know, giving courses, but I mean, instructing other people how to teach yoga and massage. And a lot of what you're talking about is reminding me a lot of what she said too, but with this chi running in the running sense of things, it really intrigues me. I'd like to look into some of the material you've read on it. You know, it's,
and the thing that I've found is that for most of my life I have been my mind was somewhat disconnected from my body. Your mind and body are connected subconsciously, but as far as the conscious awareness of what my body is doing was not there. And so I just kind of turned it over to subconscious and it's just, I'm finding once I've been able to get my mind and body in sync, I'm much healthier and I've been able to do things I thought was impossible. And
this is so interesting to me. I mean, I've it sounds like you've read way more up on it and learned a lot more on it. You probably had a lot more personal experience with this stuff, but like I've been starting to read some books, trying to learn some of this stuff. One of the books is The Power of Now with Eckhart Tolle. It's really good book. And I've watched some of his YouTube videos.
Basically the same principles he's talking about.
Yeah.
That I brought into running, and so for a 100-miler, you're out there in the middle of the night when things go wrong.
Miles. I mean, 44 is my longest. You guys are, wow. I got to get a 50-miler, man. You got to train me.
It was, you know, I had this pain, you know, this pain in my leg and pain in my foot. And I had to, there's physical pains, aches and pains, things that will happen when you're out there, when you're out on a long run like that. But pain, the emotional side of it is the emotional side of it is just as much of a part of dealing with it as the physical side. And so I was able to push through and finish that time. But yeah,
which one was that? Which race was that?
That was Pumpkin Holler.
Wow.
And so that's the only 100-miler I've completed. I did the Hawk.
Oh, you've only done one.
Well, my first attempt was the Hawk 100. And so, it was at Lawrence and I did 84 miles and I missed the cutoff because it rained rained in the middle of the night. The trails turned to just soup.
I did Psycho Waiko and soup two times and it was terrible.
Yeah. And you know, if you run trails in the mud, like you'd read, did Psycho Waiko, you know, you can manage the uphills, you can manage the level, but going downhill,
you have to ski it. That's what I did. I mean, so many people dropped out of that one in 2018 or whenever it was, but
yeah.
And I was skiing down that hill.
Yeah. And the mud that I found at Clinton at the Hawk 100, it was just, I mean, I couldn't ski down it. It was such a technical trail that there were rocks and roots and so it was like having to stair step down and I couldn't go any faster than I was going. And it was, you know, a slow walk down every hill. And I felt it was a DNF and I felt really good about it because I felt I'd given it my best.
Well, you're 84 miles, right?
I mean, 84 miles. Yeah. 84
I mean, miles. Do not finish at 84. Come on. Yeah. It's like way to go.
Yeah.
Good job.
And for me, and it wasn't a physical breakdown. It wasn't that I'd mismanaged my time. I was on pace, until I had to slow down, and I fell once and injured. I almost, you know, landed hard enough on a root. I got this welt that's about that big around my arm for a month after. I mean, when I hit, I was like, you know, I could have broken my arm just then. I was like, yeah, I've still got to go out and work. I can't injure myself here. But yeah, it was the mindset of just to keep going. And I was able to still be in touch with my body, what was going on with my body because of the mindset work that I'd done. And so again, going back to the diet, if I eat sugar, I can feel the difference, and I'm sure you can too.
It's not classified as a drug. I wonder why, but it resembles similar reactions as to taking, you know, caffeine or a drug.
So you said you've run an ultra. You've run what? Is you 50Ks? Is
yeah, that I've what run some 50Ks, probably 4 or 5 50Ks. The longest I did was a 44-miler. That was the Brew to Brew, and that's just way too much straightaway along that rail line on Highway 32. That first half is. I was not trained up for that.
I know the Brew to Brew is from Kansas City to Lawrence.
It's quite a lot of straightaway without.
It's all in straightaway. Was it on road or trail?
Most of it was on road. Some of it was gravel. Okay. And so at the end, the last 4.5 is on that levee.
Okay. Okay.
That was a tough one.
Yeah. I find
one of my favorite run, honestly, was, and so that's the longest one is 44 milers and then 50 Ks, but, Pikes Peak, I just ran it. Well, I hiked. You can't run up Pikes Peak, not all of it. You can run some of it. But July 5th last year, I went up Bar Trail up to the top and ran most of it down. So it took me about 5 hours, 15 minutes to get to the top. Took a 15-minute break up there. Had Pepsi only because they didn't have Coke. Otherwise, I would have never drank Pepsi. I don't like Pepsi. Side note. But 15 minutes up there, took some photos, and then ran back down. And, you know, I could have taken a shuttle back down, but I thought, man, I feel pretty good, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was another one. I had two steaks the night before. I stayed with my sister in Colorado Springs, and my brother-in-law made steaks. I was on a carnivore diet. It was Meaty May. This was another experiment. I went on a carnivore.
I remember. I'd forgotten that you did Meaty May last year.
Yeah. Well, I did Meaty May, and then so that was Meaty May, and then July 5th, I was still kind of doing carnivore, and I had steaks the night before, and then I was in a fasted state. I had one Peely Nut. It's a brand called Peely Nuts. It's basically a nut butter, kind of like Justin's nut butter. I had a few of those packets in my pack, and I didn't have one until I got to Timberline. So it was about, I don't know, about 4 hours into the ascent. And I had this whole thing in my head going, I'm not hungry. I've been taking my salt tabs and hydrating. I'm not hungry, but I might bonk, so I better preemptively take some. So I had 200 calories of that. Got up to the top, had my caffeine with my Diet Pepsi, which was terrible. Went to the bathroom, and then I ran back down, and I had my other nut butter packets, but I never needed them. I ran it down in just shy of 3 hours. Okay. So it was a great – it wasn't an official race, but it was probably my most enjoyable experience as far as running slash hiking. And it was like an 8-hour, 18-minute day.
Yeah.
And so how did you get water? On a whim. I took a pack. I took a bladder that had a 2.5 liter, and then at the top I filled up.
Okay.
So, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I was okay. I didn't fill up the whole 2.5 liters. I did about 2 liters, but. And it's, I highly recommend that, where if you just do the ascent and take a shuttle down, but if you want, but it's such a beautiful, beautiful
race. I lost your audio. Yeah. Sounds like the plug turned or something like that.
Okay. So yeah, that wasn't like the official one that I think is the official ones at the end of July or something.
Right.
For Pikes Peak. Right. This was just going up, you know, on a beautiful day at 5 a.m. And
so you started at 5. It was all self-supported.
Yeah. All self-supporting. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I got to the top and filled up my bladder with more water. Gift shop is up there.
Okay.
That's what they call it. Yep. Mm-hmm. So it was fun. I'll do it again.
So yeah, I'd forgotten about the carnivore diet. Tell me what was the deal with the carnivore diet?
So, I mean, and, you know, there's,
and
this
I, you,
kind of
and
this,
I remember your results were pretty good for that.
They're amazing. I couldn't believe this. And I say amazing because, I mean, I exercised less. I actually did less intermittent fasting. Like I was breaking my, normally I don't eat until like 1 p.m, maybe noon, but usually it's like from somewhere at around noon to 5 is where I'll have my first calories. On the carnivore diet, I was feeling, like eating more often. I wasn't wanting to eat more volume necessarily, but, and it was all intuitive. I don't like counting calories or weighing food or any of that, which is, I mean, I've done that before and I just don't enjoy that. So I didn't do any of that. I was just kind of eating, what do you call it, ad libitum or whatever the Latin term is, at will, however much I wanted to eat. And I lost weight, you know, I mean, it's like I was already pretty lean. I probably had maybe 8 pounds. I think I ended up losing 12 pounds in Meaty May. And I was already on a cut leading up to it, you know, trying to kind of get down to around 10% body fat. Mm-hmm. And it put me down around 8%. You know, I mean, it was just crazy. I was, like I said, I was eating like 2 steaks and stuff like that. I wasn't starving by any means, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was eating. Every once in a while, I'd throw in some cheese with hamburger. You know, I was trying not to eat cheese very often. I was trying to really just make this a carnivore month.
So it was just meat.
Just meat. And that, like I said, I think I would have hard-boiled eggs every now and then and cheese every now and then, but definitely not daily.
Okay.
And I would have coffee and stuff. But,
no cream in the coffee?
No cream. Okay. No, I didn't have any. Sometimes I have butter in the coffee, I think, but not even often on that.
Okay. See, yeah, my normal, I mean, right off the bat for me is bulletproof coffee. You know, I do cream butter and coconut oil. And
So I like the coconut oil, and sometimes I'll throw MCT oil in there and the fatty coffees, you know, sometimes I have that. Today I had butter in my coffee. I get the Kerrygold stuff, the grass fed stuff. Uh-huh. And I like it. When I'm just lazy and I don't want to concoct a nice bulletproof coffee, I just throw a little butter in there. But I like the heavy whipping cream in there sometimes too.
Yeah, that's we usually buy heavy whipping cream, and by three or four quarts at a time sometimes.
Yeah.
Well,
interesting what you say about that too, because some people, if you're just having the fat calories, you know, the heavy whipping cream and maybe butter, they're just fat calories. And some people say that's, you're not even really breaking your fast, because some people qualify breaking a fast as anything that will spike your insulin, right?
Okay.
And your blood sugar. Huh. But fats don't tend to really raise your blood sugar by any significant amount. So some people contend that, you know, having, you know, 100 calories of butter or heavy whipping cream in your coffee in the morning, you're still kind of in a fasted state. To me, I just kind of try to just not have any calories whatsoever when I'm trying to the fasting, getting back to the intermittent fasting. There's this thing called autophagy, which is your body's way of doing cell repair. You know, it takes damaged cells and it cleans out dead, you know, damaged cells. And that's called autophagy. And there's books on this, you know, Dr. Jason Fung, The Obesity Code. It's a really, really good book. He's what do you call the, the doctors that work on kidneys, and I forget the name of those. He's a medical doctor in Canada, but he's a really big spokesperson for fasting in the low carb keto community. But you know, this autophagy, I think it's kind of an anti-aging thing.
Okay.
In layman's term, but it's a way for your body to clean up its damaged cells. And mm-hmm. So that can help, you know, inflammation, joint problems and stuff like that. Again, I'm not a doctor, I'm just kind of telling you what I've read. So sometimes when I'm fasting, it isn't really about weight. It's more about just trying to heal the body.
Uh-huh.
And the autophagy, they say, it's kind of hard to measure, but they think that starts to kick in right around 18 hours and it peaks right around 36 to 40 hours. And then you probably want to quit your fasting right around, you know, before 72 hours, because then you'll have diminishing returns on the autophagy. Diminishing
returns from that. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Have someone here, I don't know if I'm pronouncing the name right, Soyun says he's 42 hours into a fast. And he's
he's down in Australia. He's a friend of mine. I connected with a medical doctor friend, a college roommate of mine.
He's doing carnivore too. So
he's been carnivore for over a year. This guy, he's got an amazing. I'll tag you on his post, Eric. His story is just incredible. And this guy is the epitome of being consistent, not with just diet, but just with training, with everything. And it's just, he's got a really positive mindset. So back to what you're saying with mm-hmm. mindset, I mean, the guy's just, he just kills it. I mean, he's amazing. Yeah, and he happens to be in the middle of an extended fast. I saw him post about that.
Yeah, he says he's 42 hours in. So, yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, that's good.
He asked me earlier, hey, can you weight train when you're on an extended fast? And I said, listen, check your ego at the door. You know, yes, you can. But if you feel at all lightheaded, you know, don't lift anymore. Go eat, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, it's mm-hmm. Again, it's about being very cautious and being honest, you know, with yourself, how you feel. And mm-hmm. I mean, I've lifted before, you know, at 40 hours and felt great. It didn't make any sense, but I felt great. And I was lifting mm-hmm. heavy. Don't do what I'm telling you to do. I'm just telling you my experience. But, you know, if I'm coaching somebody, I would probably not coach them to go out and lift. I mean, as a mm-hmm. coach, you can't coach somebody to do this kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, and there's, you know, everybody's individual. I mean, everyone is different. I mean, you know, a lot of people in groups say you can't go from not running at all to running 50 miles in a year, you know, a year later, you know, you need to take it slow. And I'm like, well,
right.
A lot of people do, but you know, I'm like, mm-hmm. I did it. You know, that was what I did. That was my goal. And,
it's amazing. You know,
when I started running, I said, I'm going to run the Hawk 50 next year. And, I hadn't run for 30 years.
September, right?
September. Yeah.
And that's in September. Yeah.
September. Yeah. September of 2017, friend of mine did it. I hadn't run for 30 years. I ran back in my early 30s was when I quit running, and
wow.
I hadn't run since at all. And, I said, that looks like fun. I was on keto, you know, doing this diet.
Yeah.
So I've probably lost enough. I could run without injuring myself. And I started running, and a year later I did the Hawk 50. And, So it's
amazing. So you started this low carb stuff before you got back into training in a serious way.
I was mountain biking.
You didn't really have to worry about that being taken down a couple notches on energy while you adapted, because you were adapting ahead of it.
I'd lost the weight. I was 5 pounds below my goal weight when I started running. So I'd gotten down to 195 because I knew with Christmas and New Year, you know, with all the stuff that I was going to do in December, you know, it's just family and stuff. You eat more,
right?
Because I needed a 5 pound margin. And so, I was at 195 by August and,
amazing.
But the thing is, the great thing was I set my goal for the end of the year. So I hit my goal. I was at 195. I was like, well, I'm not done. You know, I was like, it was like, okay, now I'm here, but you know, I haven't met my goal yet. My brain didn't click over and say, oh, I've done that. Now I can go back to the way I used to be. And so I had to stay with that And so it was easy for changing my behavior, changing my mindset over a year about the way I ate was the thing that really made the difference for me, rather than, you know, if I'd lose weight, you know, I was like, okay, then I always lapse back into the eating the way I'd done before. But setting my goal for a year out.
Like the whole all is lost mentality. I know I've been there before.
Yeah.
But once you learn some of these tools about it and you have a different mindset, like you're saying, it's amazing. You're just like, I'll just get back in the toolkit and do this more consistently like I was before.
Yeah. And then, you know, I fell off the wagon in 2018. I, you know, wasn't as careful, but it was not hard for me. It was, you know, I let some old habits slip back in.
Right.
And it was like, started feeling sluggish, and it's like, okay, you know, I know where I was, and just to go back and start doing the things I was doing. The other challenge I remember that you gave at the beginning of this year was no way till May.
So
where did that come from?
I don't know. I mean, I saw people posting about their weight, that number on the scale thing. I was like, okay, I'm going to go do the opposite. I'm going to not look at the number on the scale, because I would look at the number. It's a good feedback thing. It's just like anything, you know, oh, my jeans are fitting looser, I'm probably doing something right. Oh, the scale, I see that, you know, normally I'm up in the low 180s, but wow, I've been staying at the high 170s lately. This is good. You know, this means this format of working out, this lifestyle I'm doing right now, this patterns and being consistent about getting to sleep and eating right and exercising not too much or too little is working, you know. So that's another feedback, you know, another variable. But then it can be a burden, you know, and people are just like, oh, I'm so worried about this number 178.6 on the scale, and why is it not budging, you know? And then sometimes you just want to say, screw it, I'm gonna go by how I feel. And I guarantee I've gained weight since I did this, like, I don't know, February. I can tell.
It was January. I mean, my clothes don't fit too much. I was in Hawaii when I saw your post. And I was like, and because I went on vacation with the idea of, like, I want to come back and not have gained a bunch of weight. And so I was planning to come back and say, okay, you know, I've gained, you know, 4 pounds, 5 pounds, and I need to get back on this. And then you post this thing as like, okay, I'll do that. I couldn't come back and weigh myself.
It's been easy for me because I don't have a scale at home, and the gym is where I would weigh. You know, I'd be like curious after I get out of the sauna, I go weigh, you know, before I shower, and then they close down the gym because coronavirus. So I'm just like,
So yeah, you really
can't. Well, now here we are in May, and it's just like I'm not going to go buy a scale. I mean, but now I'm like, I probably don't want to weigh myself right now anyways, because I've had some slip-ups more often than not.
I was 8 pounds up when I stepped on the scale. Yeah. And I'm back. But I think it's because I've been doing weight training this year. And I wasn't last
year.
That's
a good thing.
So I feel, actually, I'm running faster and I feel better.
That's amazing. And,
you know,
that's great.
With carrying an extra, you know, extra weight, but
take the extra pounds on the scale for that. I'd do that any day.
Yeah. And I'm like, that challenge you gave was, you know, it was good. It was because it wasn't set up so much that I was obsessed with it, but it was like, that was my gauge, you know? And so I was always, right. it was, and for the time I lost the weight, it was good for me to do that. But
yeah,
but for the maintaining, it was like, oh yeah, it's probably better to step back and relax.
Yeah, I mean, I like a lot of what you say about mindset and how you feel, and that, you know, my fiance talks about this too. It's about how you feel is so important. I mean, just for even any given training run, you know, if I'm going to go out, this is one thing I don't like about running after work versus running before work, because even if you don't feel stressed at work, you've inevitably accumulated some stress of the day. Mm-hmm. And you feel that in your first mile when you go out and run at 5 o'clock mm-hmm. in the evening versus running at 7 in the morning before work's ever started. Okay. To me anyway, I do. I notice there's a big difference on how my run starts when I do it in the evening versus the morning. But how you feel, you can stop and walk and let your body calibrate a little bit, you know, and this is something that my ego doesn't kind of let me do. It's like, no, I've only got this amount of time and I don't want to burn that first mile. I want it to count. Mm-hmm. Why don't I just not switch on the Garmin and I just let my body, you know, kind of calibrate and breathe and feel right mm-hmm. and then get into a proper run, you know, instead yeah. of just stepping out the door and barely stretching and just go, go, go. So I think a lot of what you say about how you feel and your mindset is a really important factor in things.
For me, almost every run it's about the third mile before I really start hitting my stride.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't seem to matter whether it's morning or evening, you know, just
right.
to get to really, I really don't get my rhythm until I've run 2 miles. Right. And so I kind of look at those first 2 miles as like, oh, that's just kind of my warm up. And so,
yeah.
So I don't worry about it. And if I'm only going, I'm only running 3 miles and I get, you know, 1 mile of just feeling that flow, but, yeah. it takes a while to get in it. And,
yeah, that's great. And, you know, I talked to you a little bit before live tonight doing the Yasso 800 speed workout. You know, I'm not a speed training, you know, doing repeats or hill repeats or any of these, you know, the higher, heart rate running, you know, track Tuesdays, if you will. Mm-hmm. It's not my cup of tea, but I'm getting into coaching. It's like, and I've done this before. I just really want to know what I'll be coaching. And so for me, that's going out and living it too. Mm-hmm. And, but it's not something that I prefer to do the long, slow run and to kind of get into the zone and that flow state.
So like do you monitor saying. Your heart rate then as your, do is it, or is it still more kind of casual?
Well, it was a little bit casual today. I'll tell you what, that Pikes Peak thing I did last year, because I was not trained to go out and do 8 hours and 18 minutes. Lord knows I was not ready for that from a training traditional preparation standpoint. So what I did was like, okay, heart rate. Let's look at heart rate. Let's keep my heart rate down, you know, in that MAF zone or low 130s if possible, mm-hmm. especially on the ascent. So I have some energy in the tank for coming back down. And that was a whim plan. It's just like, here's going to be my strategy today. Keep my heart rate basically in the aerobic zone. Mm-hmm. Flirt up into the 140s, you know, and low 150s, but don't stay there. Come back down to the 130s. And then I might have a chance here. That's kind of how my improvised strategy was, and it worked, you know. So I think there's a lot of value to heart rate. But tonight, to answer your question, I didn't really use heart rate. I just the Yasso 800s is basically, what do you think your marathon goal time is? And so I picked two different ones. I said 350 and 340. And it's like, basically you're doing an 800, a half mile. Instead of 3 hours and 40 minutes, it's 3 minutes and 40 seconds. So okay. That's what you want to finish. And then you calibrate, you figure out what is that pace you enter in, and then you hit it. And then your rest in between those 800 intervals, your half mile intervals, is the same length. So it's 3 minutes okay. and today it was 3 minutes and 38 seconds for me for the running part for the half mile, and then 3 minutes and 38 seconds of rest. And I did 5 intervals of it. Okay. But I wasn't looking to see what's my heart rate and stay in that heart rate zone
okay.
by any means.
Okay.
I should look at what my heart rate average was on that. I didn't look at that after my workout, but I'm sure it was up there.
Yeah. Now,
not VO2, but pretty high.
We talked about this before we came live, but you just got a certification as running coach. So talk a little bit about that. So if somebody sees this, tell a little bit about what you have to offer as a running coach, or where you're.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll be picking your brain because I'm going to start a business. And here's the reason is I get a lot of questions from people that are getting into running, or they've been running and they're wanting some nutrition advice or what have you. But there's a lot of people that are just asking questions that are new to running, or if they want to set a new PR. And I love trying to help them, but I can't really justify spending a lot of time on it. So it is something I discovered. I like fielding these questions. I like responding to people and seeing them meet their goals and stuff like this, and seeing what they're going to do if they're going to finish their first half marathon. This is something I want to get into. I've gotten a lot out of being fit and being interested in fitness, and running is my passion within fitness. And so I think that's an avenue I want to pursue, at least as a side hustle to start with. I won't quit my day job. But, you know, like my fiance is the one that said, well, get off your ass and go get certified in a couple things, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I know, I was just kind of like casually talking about it. I was just blah, blah, blah. And she's just like, do it, man. She's, you know, she's, go do it. And so that's what I signed up for. And
sounds like she should keep her around. Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean,
my wife will tell me the same thing. I'll be talking. And she says, just get off. You just...
I mean, it's such a supportive person to have, you know, somebody like that. It's just not everybody has people like that, that know, encourage you to follow your dreams. And I'm very grateful for that.
That's good. So, well, I'll try to keep these things a little right at an hour. So we've been going at this for an hour. So, how can people connect with you? If they wanted to connect with you, through social media, what's the best avenue to,
Facebook a whole lot or anything. I mean, I don't use Instagram a whole ton. Sometimes I'll get on there, sometimes not. I used to be on there quite a bit. I used to make YouTube videos, anti-gravity gains, if you did a search there. But I haven't really messed around with YouTube videos. I just don't have time for that. I would like to get back into that sometime. I just can't justify. I love the video editing process. It's fun, but it's just not on top of my priority. So I don't push a lot of content out onto YouTube anymore. Maybe I will. I would appreciate it if people want to follow. I've put some stuff about, you know, that muddy psycho Waco is one of the videos out there, how I did my nutrition that day, and Garmin, I think I put out there too, and some other things, but mainly Instagram at anti-gravity gains. That's probably the social media platform I would be the most active on.
That's where I tend to,
you know, once I get more certification, maybe start a website and offer some coaching, you know, buys, you know, my content I put on there. I really want to pursue this where I can help people, and I'm just not quite there yet as far as setting up, you know, a business and being legit like you have with the ultra marathon mindset, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I usually, whenever I see you, it's always, through Instagram. So, anti-gravity gains. And so,
The other one's more my personal one. I invited you on that 'cause you're my buddy. So
I appreciate that. Yeah. That's good. Well, and I
know my kid on that, you know,
yeah. Stuff like that. Well, and I have, I tend to share personal stuff, and mixing business and personal for me is something that I just do. And, so I just kind of, I try not to, you know, if people don't know who I am, as a person, you know, right. If you're just all business, I know people who are all business, and that's all they talk about. And
yeah.
It gets tedious because they're just one dimensional.
It does. Yeah. And for me, it's just more of like, if I have my sister visiting, you know, I would be able to, you know, freely put a picture of us on my personal Instagram. I wouldn't do that to her on, you know, somewhere where I'm just mainly in fitness and nutrition type community with the anti-gravity gains. So, and same thing with my kid, you know, but.
Yeah. And that's, and there's a whole thing of, you know, whole theory about branding and what do you share, and you know, people curate their image online. I'm like, I know the value of that, but it's just like, I don't do a very good job of curating it.
I mean, I have my serious moments. What you see is what you get. Like with me on the anti-gravity gains, I am who I am. I act like a clown sometimes, just joking around and being silly. But I mean, there are moments on there where it's like you and I are right now. This is who I am. You know, it's the real deal. I mean, it's not that I'm not the real Basile when I'm on the anti-gravity. I take a little bit more artistic liberty of being silly on anti-gravity.
Well, and I enjoy the, some of the things you do on it. I mean, playing the guitar and some of the music choices that you make, and, you know, it's always been, you come across as who you are, and I've always appreciated that. And so it's
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, hey, thanks so much, Dave. I appreciate you taking time to talk to us.
Well, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
And,
I've got your book, by the way. I advise others to get your book too.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm learning a lot. So I'll be picking your brain more.
Okay. We'll be in touch. So, well, I'm going to switch over here to, say goodbye to everybody and, kind of give a promo and thank you again. Thanks for watching this episode of Trail Talk, the Ultra Marathon Mindset. I appreciate those of you who've stayed and done the live, have commented through the chats and the comments, and hope that you found it valuable. If you're watching this on replay and have questions, reach out to me. Hit me up on Facebook Messenger. We'd be glad to help you with anything or connect you with Dave through his ventures, and that's what we're about, is to help you be your best, whether you're running ultramarathons or any distance. Thanks a lot for watching. I'll see you next time.